Hello everyone, this is Dark Journalist with part two of my special interview with mystic and esoteric researcher and the creator of the Mars Mysteries series, Gigi Young. Tonight, Gigi will go even deeper on the development of AI intrusions into consciousness, a process started in Atlantis, and DNA interference with biometrics and genetic inversions to prepare humanity for the virtual reality realm, the Eighth Sphere. She also looks at the role that true and false UFO disclosure plays in the narrative. Please join us. Now. Yeah. Gigi, what is the agenda?
The agenda, I think, is multifaceted. But I think ultimately, I think the agenda is to introduce a new techno-religion. I think that there's lots of different things that will go on the planet that will be essentially kind of like false events that will go on in order to usher this in. I think it goes very, very deep into creating a new society. And when we look at the pandemic that's occurred, what's happening with the economy, what's happening with relations, global relations, with wars and things like this, our way of life, our world is being systematically destroyed. Why? To bring forward a new one.
Right.
Everything is being destroyed so that we enter maybe even a state of mourning or hypnagogic trauma state. So we accept these unnatural things and these unnatural people as leaders.
Right. And we're surrounded by them.
And we are surrounded by them. And the more our world is torn out, our dreams are torn out from underneath us, the more we believe that these are okay people, the more we believe their bizarre ideologies. All of this is happening. Everything that we have known is being torn down systematically to build something else up. And I would say that something else is the Eighth Sphere. I would say that something else is a synthetic world, based on hybridization, based on genetic manipulation, a Gattaca world. There's so much different language, and there's so many different ways where we could just tune in and look at one different aspect of it, but ultimately it is a different society. It's a different, unnatural, inorganic way of life.
This is fascinating because Rudolf Steiner's back there in 1920 and saying, oh, we just had World War One. And you know what? I have all this secret stuff I've been keeping for students around Ahriman and everything else. I'm going to let all that out, and the lectures and all the rest of it, because, you know, apparently on this, he was feeling, well, the mystery schools failed because we didn't get the message out fully in that period to prevent World War One. But he says, I'll tell you what, in 100 years, anthroposophy is going to get a chance again. But he's back there looking, and he's putting out the information about the Eighth Sphere. And his version of the Eighth Sphere sounds a lot like projection of virtual reality. And the mind and the individual get trapped in that virtual reality. And they become an inhabitant of the Eighth Sphere through that without ever realizing this is even taking place, because they're getting so glamorized in the process. So, in a way, the Steiner work comes out as a corrective and says, well, no, there's this Eighth Sphere thing. So when you go into that virtual reality, understand, you know, this thing is sucking you, drawing you in. So there's a battle there, which is lay the entrainment on you, lay the brainwashing on you, suck you into this thing, cosmologically speaking. And then there's something that's happening, even with the conversation we're having, bringing this and the people who are listening it, they're starting to say, oh, the Eighth Sphere, Ahriman, mm-hmm. You know, it's a counter agent to, it's a counteractive to that thing that's taking place.
Absolutely. He was, I think, the prophet of our time.
Interesting.
You know, yes. Yeah, he is. He is. His work on pointing out that the opposition force in the world will be one of a synthetic, artificial nature is huge. No other mystic has done it in that way. And it is timely because it's exactly what we're dealing with. To personify it into Ahriman was also very brilliant, because these forces that are impulses always personify in the cosmos. So there's a huge lesson in why Ahriman even exists and things. Very deep and profound mystery teaching that I think colored his work, because we also see Steiner not only teaching that important lesson, but we also see him coming up with biodynamic gardening, which is the total opposite of GMO. A totally different mindset. I mean, this is about, let's harmonize with our planet. Let's see how we can use the magic of the earth. You know, how can this plant work with this plant? How can we get the most out of it? Working with nature, with each other, you know, and then you have this other group, which is really kind of a Belial force. That's like, no, I'm just going to crack the genetic code and do what I want. You know, it's right. It's a completely different energy. You also see him coming up with a way of schooling, which he never got to complete, which is the Waldorf schools. Temple dances, you know, I think when you look at what he was seeing in his life about where humanity was going, the other facet of his work was trying to create the basis of maybe something that could survive.
Yes. World War II lay off in the distance, the radical, militarization of Germany, all these things were right on the cusp there. And he's building a movement that can survive through that, but get to the 21st century, where all the challenges are the artifice aspect. Yes.
Threefold social order as well.
Yes,
it's
right.
A capsule. You know? Yeah.
It is. And it speaks so often to this period. It's eerie, I think, with a lot of his work. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, even his very famous inoculation quote. I have to be honest, not one psychic predicted COVID-19.
That's true.
You know, I don't know of one, including myself. So, I mean, it's been a huge, the changes have been huge. So that just shows, you know, it's not easy to view these things. So
we're in unknown territory.
Yeah. But it's incredible that he did. So, I think that I personally think that the work around Ahriman and the eight spheres, just if we could understand that, you know, I think that that would really change the direction of where a lot of things are going, because we'd begin to be able to discern what is natural and what is synthetic, and not just in the sense of food, but in the sense of spiritual energies, you know, like, what is balance, what is imbalance, because what's going on now is there is not a whole lot of discernment between those two things.
Well, there's no question. And it seems like the rise in the Ahrimanic activity, you know, that's up. And the spiritual side needs to kind of awaken through the mystery school teachings to catch up and counteract, because automatically people are going into video games. You know, you have a worldwide addiction to technology. It comes into deeper levels, pornography, gambling online. That's all Ahrimanic activity. And so now you have it on a global scale, far advanced from where it was, say, you know, in the 70s and 80s with television, you know, and there were aspects of this that was growing, but it wasn't where it is now. And now with the metaverse, Gigi, they want to put you in to the eighth sphere. Like, I'm just going to drop you in there.
You know, I sometimes look at the metaverse, like the weird videos, and I'm like, I think that in your mind, this looked a lot cooler than it does out here. I think that, but that's totally what it is.
Yeah.
And it hasn't really been as popular, I think, as they needed it to be. And I think they're kind of hoping that when people are on lockdown, that they're going to like choose their avatar and like run around the metaverse.
Yes.
But it hasn't really been, people haven't wanted to get that deep with it. They like the video games, it seems, but a lot of people have been rejecting it. But overall, something like the metaverse and projecting yourself into that is just complete manifestation of the eighth sphere.
Yes.
The fantasy world, the technology, all of that. It's just part and parcel.
Well, that's really interesting too, because, you know, fantasies can be creative and they can get you into stages of creativity. They can form civilization through imagination. The problem with this particular type is the attempt seems to be to have you live your life there and forget about this one.
Right. That's a good point. Fantasy is genius. It's one of the best ways to share difficult truths, a story.
Mm-hmm.
And dream and things like that. And being a mystic, a lot of that is being able to enter that realm and read symbols, you know, and things like that. But with the eighth sphere, the fantasy is to escape.
Right. And what does it offer you, Gigi? It offers you everything you want, right?
Right, exactly. And if you get people in a very depressed state and then you introduce these things, you know, it's kind of a toxic temptation, I think, for many people.
When you look, there's the Philip Dick story where they made the movie out of it, Total Recall, in the 90s. And what they do at a certain point, if you want to go somewhere, you can take these trips mentally and they'll inject the trip into you. And they do that, you know, through the neck with the needle and you go into that. And I was like, thinking to myself, and after studying Dick, he's so interesting in the way that, you know, creating Blade Runner and all the different novels that were the foundations for these things. And he's writing about this stuff very early on, 50s, 60s, 70s. But that is a real kind of good snapshot of the eighth sphere, because the idea is I'm going to inject you with this fantasy. You got the woman of your dreams. You're a superhero in this. You know, you go to Mars and you save the day, you save the world, you know, bad guys are after you and all that kind of thing. And they inject the fantasy into him. And the idea, you know, in the movie is that he rejects it because he already is a secret agent. And so it can't work on him and it blows his cover and all that stuff. And so it is interesting, but that's a pretty good example of an injection leading you into the eighth sphere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's unnatural too, because when you're genuinely interacting with higher planes, usually that's not the case. A lot of the times you have to go through very difficult initiations where you see, you know, the dweller at the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see the summation of all of your fears. This was what they used to do to, you know, mystery initiates in Egypt or wherever. They would, you know, put you in kind of a state where you began to leave your body, you know, to go into this higher plane, and you'd literally have a horrible experience because you were had to face your own darkness. So in other words, going into the spiritual planes, leaving your body, is something that you earn and that you learn how to do, usually over many different lifetimes, and how to do it properly. Mm-hmm. And so this promise of saying, hey, you can have this out-of-body experience in this higher plane, that is, that will actually make people atrophy, if anything, because there's a whole element that's removed, which is the initiatory process, the development of the individual to actually have those experiences. You have to have a certain character. There's all these kinds of things to enter these planes, you know, safely. And they're saying, no, you know, here you go, just inject you with it. Or you know, Steiner also said that there would be a kind of clairvoyance just given to people.
Right. Yes.
So this is not earning things that the basis of our society was often based on learning and earning these cities or these powers or these abilities back. They're now being given to you, and they're not real at all. What you're entering is not your own. You're not entering the genuine universe. You're not entering a genuine plane. You're entering somebody else's sphere. You're entering something else.
That's the VR tech there. Right. That is, I mean, you can imagine the next level of that, because we're still dealing with it and somebody puts on a headgear and all the rest of it. But really, you can easily imagine them just, you know, that little chip in your brain, zap, and there you go. I mean, that's that's where they're headed with it. Gigi, it's interesting to me when I think about this, we'll round out the whole eighth sphere piece this way. The society has a real technological problem right now, and the controllers of that society are trying to, like they did with the lockdowns, get everyone on Zoom and make sure that they don't talk. Actually, Jacinda Ardern, one of the famous World Economic Forum leaders, who's the Prime Minister of New Zealand, she actually, in her press conference, when she was trying to get everyone to stay in their house, even though they had one case in New Zealand, like two cases max, she said, don't talk to your neighbors. And if you see people you know in the supermarket, don't talk to them. And I was like, that's the clearest possible indication that there's something in that exchange of the resonance of people, which they have to get in between. And if they don't get in between it, they can't pull it off.
That's a really good point. There's always been this idea that if more than one people gather under the same intention, that it can knock out thousands of people that are aligned with a negative intention.
Yes.
And so that there's this great and incredible power when we gather together under a good intention or under love or under freedom. These are very powerful things to align with and gather together under. And even a small group that's gathering under those circumstances can take down massive forces that are completely weakened due to their imbalances.
Right.
And so to have people coming together and, you know, gathering is a huge threat to them on the, you know, but and even just having people isolated causes them to degenerate in general. But there's a huge influential thing that happens when we come together under a noble means.
Well, if we think that a lot of the mystery school activity, the Rata and the Temple of Beauty and this whole thing that set out in 10,500 BC for the Great Pyramid, that whole work to get humanity onto a new level, the thing that was left hanging out there were the Atlantean things, which was them messing with the genetic code of humanity and making these hybrids of different versions. I call them Atlantean cyborgs because I think it's, you know, it's probably the best description. There's definitely some indication that they were mixing animals with humans as well. And that part of the process that Rata was doing was taking the endocrine system of these beings and changing them so that they could receive a soul and become in evolution, move on from this track. And this is something that you've mentioned before, which is some of these things, some of these misdirected beings, some of the eighth sphere offshoots, the rejects, as it were, they could be redeemed in the system of thing if that system was normalized. So as an outline, you know, right now there's an artificial thing that takes place when people get sucked into that harmonic realm, and there's a series of regressive beings that are involved with that. But the idea is, in a normal evolutionary trend, that group also could become part of that natural spiritual evolution. So how do you see that?
Yes, so actually, the human body begins to deform when it turns its back from God. But God never turns his back on you. You know, Christ never turns his back on you. That consciousness is something that we turn against within ourselves. And we begin to go down this really divergent path. But there's a process for every human being and every being that allows them to reintegrate into the organic life wave or into the natural life wave. But it doesn't involve manipulation. It doesn't involve like abductions or rape or stealing genetics and forcing your way back into the life wave. You actually have to admit that you're wrong. And you have to ask for forgiveness. And you have to atone. It's the process that many of us were probably taught as children. But you have to humble yourself and admit that you're wrong. And then there are spiritual forces, angelic forces that will come around you and they'll begin to help you remove these forces from you slowly over time. And then you'll begin to live certain lives that give you the opportunity to move back into the life wave. And they may be very painful lives, but it's not to punish you. It is to allow you to see how far you've come from God within yourself.
Oh, right.
And so everybody, anyone who has turned their back can enter back into the organic life wave, but they have to go through in a humble way. And there are forces in the world that, you know, would rather try to dominate their way in, dominate and steal genetic information and try to upgrade themselves that way. And this is just going deeper and deeper and deeper into delusion and illusion. But yes, there's a way back in for every being.
Do you think then, would you call this, that's fascinating, would you call this a crisis point in that spiritual development of humanity then?
I would. And I would say that I think the biggest genuine risk with whether it be a being that goes down that path or whether it be a human that goes down that path is that it's the loss of perception. So the human mind can become so degraded through the materialist impulse that it can no longer sense its own spirit or your own spirit.
It's properly. Cut off.
Yeah. And this is the biggest risk is the biggest sort of hurdle that I think we all face is what do we do with individuals that have lost that sense of their own spirit within them, of Christ consciousness within them? Because it's one thing if you can sense it and then you're like, nah, but that's not what's going on. What's going on is that these are individuals who have over hyper materialized in their consciousness. A good example of this is materialist science that materialist reductionist impulse where people no longer want to understand that there is more than the 3D world.
Right.
And so it's a loss of perception. And this is very scary because there's also been talk in the biomedical community about how to take that perception away from people by altering the body in certain ways or by altering the brain in certain ways.
Oh yeah.
And if you alter, the problem is too, is if you alter your form too much, like by putting a genetic program in there, you end up getting a competing system in your own system. And that can make it harder and harder and harder to sense the organic nature around you. Can be harder and harder to sense your inner Christ essence because there's now a competing program running in you that's inorganic and synthetic, that's competing with your own natural rhythm in a very subtle way, but that turns into your mind and your energy and all of that. So that loss of perception, I think, is something that, you know, I think as healers and things like that, I think we need to work on how do we begin to get that back into people that are suffering that don't have that. So
that's really interesting actually, because the Pentagon had a whole program which was based on the idea that they could actually change the molecules in the brains of extremist Muslims in the Middle East for countries that they were working with, because they were like, you know, they're too extremist. They're never going to accept the thing that we have. And so they were studying scientifically how to alter their spiritual center, their religious devotion center in the brain, where they were figuring it out. That's exactly what it sounds
like. It's like, well, actually, I'm pretty sure that the reason why they're so violent is hatred.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it has nothing to do with spirituality or religion. It's the, you know, if anybody is hurting another person, another creature in a violent way, that's hatred.
Right. So, oh, absolutely.
You know, it doesn't have anything to do with the person's, you know,
biochemistry.
Right. Right. Like, yeah. I mean, can you remove hatred from the human heart? Because that'd be great, you know? So, but yeah, it's pretty crazy that they had narrowed it down in the brain to be able, it's pretty wild though, that they could potentially do that. Like remove like your sense of spirit.
Yes. You know? Well, this is about capturing your essence, right? That's what the whole eighth sphere piece is about. And what we do, I think, and you do it particularly well in these conversations, is you take, when you lecture on something like the eighth sphere, you take it cosmologically and then start to translate it back into how this would show up in an ordinary experience, you know? And I remember somebody had said to me, well, you know, if somebody is very religious, then they never get into the eighth sphere. And I said, no, it's not true. Because the idea is, I can have you thinking about religion in a certain way where you're using the same kind of hypnotic, brainwashed version of religion. And that's Aramonic thinking, but it's around a spiritual subject. Yes. So it's a very, the way you thread the needle in there, I think it has to be interesting, which is you have to see what mechanisms are Aramonic by their nature.
Yes. And the whole thing with Aramon too is like, on the esoteric side, people understand Lucifer and Luciferianism and hedonism and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, Aramon is not really discussed really at all, especially in the way that Steiner does. So he really is kind of catching us off guard.
Yes.
So it's so important to have these conversations and say, okay, so just pure intellectualism without heart, that's Aramonic. And technology can be used very Aramonically. It's very important to have these conversations where we're delineating it out so that we can pick out what is real, you know? And because it is a misconception. People think that, you know, any kind of spirituality is good spirituality.
Right.
Well, Lucifer and Aramon enter into spirituality like it's nothing, you know?
Yes.
Lucifer is on the side of using spirituality just to create freedom, excessive freedom and chaos in your system and fantasy and dreams that have nothing to do with reality, escapism. But then Aramon can also enter spirituality in the same way, but Aramon does it through dogmatic religion. And when esoterica has been reduced over years and years and years and reduced to a set of meaningless things where that no longer represent its true impulse. So dogmatism is absolutely Aramonic. People can be participating in religions in a dogmatic way, not understanding the esoteric reality of their religion or not understanding their energy body at all and the higher worlds at all. They could even be shunning them at some point. It can get so twisted, you know, that it's like, so that is Aramonic, right? So,
oh, absolutely. I mean, Cortez, just ask the Aztecs, right? When Cortez showed up and he's like, I'm religious and holy, and then he slaughters the whole culture. I mean,
exactly.
It has to go deeper than that. Gigi, absolutely fascinating. I wanted to ask you, since we mentioned the things and ancient technology, I like to go back to an Edgar Cayce reading where they're asking him, can you describe what kind of technology the Atlanteans had? And he did a number of these when we get a real good estimation that they were very advanced technologically. At one point, he says they could travel anywhere in the universe. But he also talks about the craft that could sail through mountains, so dematerialize and rematerialize. And so that's all fascinating and also quite advanced. But one of the things that he said, when they said, can you describe the ships that the Atlanteans used? And he was like, well, they're exactly like what Ezekiel described, but that was a much later date. So we know Ezekiel's description of the wheels, the eyes, the throne, the beings with the cloven hooves and everything else. And here's Casey saying somebody in 3000 BC is operating that Atlantean technology. Are you feeling that the crossover with these beings, the kind of mutant things, mm-hmm. that they were the ones who had it?
I think so. I don't see any... I mean, if we look at how Atlantis ended, whether you look at the various different accounts that were written, or even people's just memories of it, we know that they had the kind of technology to potentially get off planet or hide out in some kind of strange way, maybe within the planet or whatever. And so if they've created these things, these cyborgs, which kind of sound quite a lot like the Greys in some ways as well, which probably, yeah, which is, if they've created these things, then why do we think that they would have disappeared with the flood automatically? You know, what if some of these things have survived, some of these chimeras that they've created, some of these automatons, and I just think that we definitely shouldn't rule that out, because it would be a great way to come to people and say, here, these are aliens from another star system. We're your gods, or here's a new origin story. And, you know, with AI technology, you can communicate with psychics and think they're channeling things. Like, they have the technology to do. The technology exists to create false spiritual experiences. And it's very possible that we have a hangover from Atlantis, you know, and I think that there's hangovers in a lot of different ways, in the sense that I think even the same people are reincarnating now and connect and sort of retapping into Belial. I think there's a new Belial. Basically.
Yes.
Nouveau Belial.
Tell me about the new Belial.
New Belial is
Belial 2.0.
Belial 2.0. Let me tell you about Belial 2.0. Belial 2.0 is everything that happened in Atlantis now, in our situation. It's all rehappening. Everything is cyclical. And I think that there were a lot more remnants of Atlantis. Mm-hmm. Than we think. I think some things have been hoarded away by secret groups, mm-hmm. good and bad. But I also think that there were beings and things that were from Atlantis as well. And if not that, the custom of creating them and a religious rite around them. And the other thing that I saw when I looked into Atlantis was a very strange and bizarre kind of magic, mm-hmm. a kind of black magic, which was the magic of DNA.
Right.
And what I saw was that it was realized by darker groups that if you merged DNA together, that it would give you information. And not only would it give you information, it would open certain portals around the earth. And so it was actually by creating like a chimera, it was a way of communicating with certain parts of the cosmos that these animals represented, or certain time periods. It was a weird kind of magic. And so I think that there's also a lot of strange magic connected to genetic modification and hybridization as well. Yeah, I think also Steiner mentions as well that Ahriman entered halfway through Atlantis. Mm-hmm. And so that would make sense for the building of these automatons and technology, because that impulse is developing. It's been developing since that time. So we're going to see it. So
right. This is interesting, because the Atlanteans had in mind, we're going to use them as a slave labor force. And you know, we're kind of assembling these different things together so we can use them that way. And we don't care if they have soul matter or not. We just want them to be kind of our robot slaves. But the problem when they're mixing all this human and animal piece is that the human wave, the spiritual wave of the animals, et cetera, mixed with this. So you have basically the way Casey describes it is pollution. That they're polluting the stream of humanity by doing this. So it's interesting when we get into that story because the things then become that echo, the kind of Frankenstein echo for our time as well. But there's some fascination about it because, you know, what is it that was left over from that period? It's not very well stated what exactly happened to them. I mean, there is that whole process of the Temple Beautiful, that whole thing that gets set up where they get, you know, a real system.
Yes. But,
so, you know, you could be talking there about a few different streams of humanity.
Yes, there are. And this is always the thing I think that's confusing for us is we think that humanity is one stream. And it's like super simple. And it's actually not. Not even talking about like races or anything, but just sort of more like higher soul essences, more so, kind of impulses and things like that. And I think that first we're going to see a very false sort of CIA, I guess, rendition of that, these different streams. And then once we hear that version, I think we'll begin to get sort of the real, we'll begin to get into the real stuff, the real version of it. But it's really interesting in the Temple Beautiful story about how there were these priests, these high priests of Atlantis, who were working towards helping the individuals that had taken on these animal forms or these different forms. And how I saw it happen is that it was actually through these higher beings that almost have to kind of sacrifice themselves. And they that's actually how things are changed as well. Going back to your earlier question, you kind of take on certain things, these great beings or these higher people, they take on the burdens of mankind, and they take on some of that darker stream. These very advanced adepts, these very advanced people, and they take this on and they create the pattern of transformation within themselves. And then a transformation goes on within them, and then they give that to humanity. So that's usually the other way how people can enter the life wave, is that stream is initially codified or purified, or the solution is given by usually great beings, or in Atlantis, it was high priests. So that is also maybe something in the future that will occur. It may be obviously something that the individual does at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But these things can be worked through inner transformation.
Right.
Through the etherization of the blood through the heart. I think each individual has the capacity now. But the fact that these darker streams exist, these mutated streams, they exist to teach us something about ourselves, about our own darkness. And I think about the cosmos too. But we have the power to transform them, you know. But we have to be able to do what we're doing here, which is admit that they exist and look at them and see the patterns. And that's the first step.
Now, I'll never forget that very interesting. That's absolutely fascinating, by the way. There's this very interesting small book about crypto-terrestrials that Mac Taney's wrote. And his theory that he put forward, and it's just before he died at the age of like 32, very young guy, died mysteriously. And he puts out this book about crypto-terrestrials, and he says, you know, there's a group here, they live basically out of sight of the regular run of humanity. They're a little more advanced. They figured out how to manipulate the general run of humanity. And they're a little more advanced technologically. They're a little more advanced in other ways. And I thought in looking back at that story, which is powerful, and for all we know, you know, is one of the reasons for his death. But in any case, he brought forward something very powerful there, which is, what if there is something operational side by side with humanity? And since it's a little more advanced, it wouldn't let itself be known. You know, when I go through all the John Keel stories, when he gets into, you know, he does a lot of footwork following up on these UFO cases back there, and he goes and he talks to them. And very often weird things have happened, you know, along the way. Like, people have said, well, what do you mean? You just came here yesterday. You know, so whoever's trekking with him is making false versions of him and going out and talking to the witnesses. And then he's getting calls after the fact, talking in that weird electronic voice that we've discussed before. So I think when we get into this idea of strata of humanity, we're a little closer to the truth. But the idea, Gigi, of one that was a little more advanced than we are, so we're actually encountering a different species.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of how exactly for me as a mystic, I read it as a different timeline, a different evolutionary timeline.
Yes.
That's how I, because it actually, they actually almost, that's how I kind of see it. And it's almost competing with the organic timeline, or like the Christ consciousness.
Right.
Forces that are not deformed and that are not trapped in the eighth sphere kind of thing. But there is this darker parallel, breakaway civilization from Atlantis, that I think is with us. And I think it has a technology that's a little bit more advanced than we are, but definitely not as advanced as the angelic consciousness, for sure. Yes. And I think us interacting with them serves as a kind of initiation for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're with us. And I think that they're the force that darker magicians contact and commune with. And I think that we could probably see it becoming recognizable in Atlantis. Like, if we were to just go back and look at it, I think looking at it there and then it breaking away and never leaving and following us and having enough technology to keep itself hidden, and a lot of technology, but not a lot of spiritual development.
Right.
Like, massive technology, but not a lot of heart or emotion or spiritual development. Very cold. I think wanting to harvest humanity's energy, wanting to live off of humanity, probably wanting to live openly on the earth even, or merge with the earth in a way more openly. I think that's probably a goal. You know, all these kinds of things. It's a very interesting conversation.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, what's fascinating is it reminds me of Native American lore, because there's a whole sort of compendium of these Native American cultures. It's a book is from 1800. And he's going through the different stories. And there's this whole area around Ohio where they talk about the Native Americans encountered this group of tall, white and round-eyed individuals. They call them Moon Eyes. They had a very advanced civilization. They had walls that kept out these other groups, and they had advanced cities and things like that. And the Native groups basically figured out a way to drive them out. But when I think about these groups that are left over from Atlantis, I think there are stories that support that thesis.
Yeah. And it's just kind of like, it's, we keep going, I think, in the alternative community to extremes, where it's like, if there's a weird being that's at your window at night, that must be an alien from Alpha Centauri. You know? And that's gotta be what that is. You know, it has to be something from off world. You know, but it's kind of like, well, if we take a look at our history, if we take a look at Atlantis, it actually makes more sense that it's not.
Right.
Not that these things, it's not, it, it, and this is where people get caught up as well. It's not one thing or another. It's lots of different stuff is going on. So there are genuine interdimensional beings like angels and things like that that are not part of this. This is like a lower sort of thing. But I think that we have to look at that. Are these the things? You know, what is the culture of creating these automatons?
Right.
What is that religion? Why are they so obsessed with genetic modification? What if we played that out and said, what if we merged a human with a reptile?
Right.
Would we get a reptilian? You know? or just these, I mean, who, you know, would a reptilian form be better to survive on Mars? Or, you know, is there, what was their desire to try to change the human form to survive? And, you know, so.
Yes. They're already doing so much monkeying around in relation to this, you know, growing a human ear on a mouse and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
God knows how far they've gotten along with it, completely out of any oversight.
Yes. And I think we have to kind of consider that, because there's this impulse with ancient aliens too, where everything is.
Yes.
Nothing is connected to our past in Atlantis. Like nothing. Yeah. You know, it's like we're living in a fragment.
Right. Yes. That's fascinating. Gigi, absolutely incredible. I have to ask you, just looking at, you know, you've been doing this work and advancing in so many ways, and the audience has seen you kind of get into all these different areas. And people can get, of course, so much of your work here on YouTube, Gigi Young, gigiyoung.com, and you're teaching these psychic courses as well. But what I wanted to ask you is, when you're looking out at that audience now, the end of 2022 here, the last quarter, and you think about the years that you've been involved bringing this stuff forward, how are you seeing that audience? Where's that audience going? Are they getting the message? Are they figuring it out? Or are they, you know, locked up in the maladies of the world?
I think all of the above. I think that there's definitely a very strong group of society that is ready. And not only that is ready, but knows. Like when I'm lecturing or something, you know, so often I get things like, oh, I always knew this. I always had this feeling. I always knew this information, but I just hadn't,
It
just hadn't been put together. So there's people who are extremely aware of this and are finding a lot of the things that I talk about as things they've already known, I guess, in a lot of ways. So they're very advanced, I think, or very spiritual, I should say. But I also think that in my field in particular, which is the spiritual field, I think there's also a very strong section of it that is very obsessed with spirituality as entertainment.
Yeah.
And spirituality as more fantasy and more escapism. And so I think that we will see the spiritual community divide into two. One is a genuine developmental side that looks at it as not only practice, but has a scholarly approach.
Right.
And is a very balanced approach. And then I think another proportion is going to become very imbalanced. And we're going to see that happen in the spiritual community. It's going to become, I think it's going to become a little crazy in the next few years.
It seems like it's going there. Yeah, you can. I mean, it's been there around and around, but
you know. So, but there's so many people that, like, you know, are very astute, very aware, very knowledgeable, and I know that if we were all just to get together, you know, it would just change. Mm-hmm. It would just change the vibe. You know, there's so many people that are, you know, sitting at home and they're the only one in their family that knows about this kind of stuff. Or, so there's, I think we don't realize how much powerful spirituality there is because we're all so isolated right now. But let me tell you, there's a very strong spiritual impulse in society. I see it all the time. It's growing by the day.
Well, you, your stuff, you know, and the things that you've been bringing forward, the Armon Eighth Sphere work you've been doing recently, and you're doing a whole series around spirituality, psychic development, and Atlantis and things of these natures. So if somebody's plugging into your work, let me tell you, they're getting places. So absolutely fascinating. Gigi, do you want to give us a preview of things you have coming up?
Yeah, I have another lecture that I'm going to do probably next week. It's going to be on the spiritual hierarchies. I'll probably get a little bit more into Atlantis in the future as well, and some of the dynamics coming out of Atlantis, and trying to bring that back, bring Atlantis back into the forefront as a continuation of our culture, and not something that we should leave behind, but we should be factoring in. You've inspired me to bring it forward in our conversation today. And I have another season of Mars Mysteries.
Excellent.
Coming forward as well.
Those are incredible. I mean, that takes a lot of skill too, because the lectures are so fascinating anyway, and you get into so many different areas. The Mars Mysteries piece, that has so much actual like graphic development and video development that you do with it, that's going into a very interesting place. You must go into kind of an interesting state of mind when you're doing those.
Yeah, I like that. I like the experience. I like the experience pieces. Yeah, the immersion stuff.
There's nothing like those. They're very interesting.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have a whole other, we're going to go even deeper into the themes in the next season. So I'm looking very forward to getting it out there. And yeah.
Well, I always tell people you're a huge contributor to everything we do for the X series. We really appreciate it. Gigi, off the charts. And if people want to find your work,
it's ggyoung.com or just ggyoung on YouTube. I'm there.
Highly recommended. It's great to see you, Gigi.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll talk soon. Yeah. It is. It's like, you know, there's a whole thing, of course, with comedians, too. They're inserting the whole comedian as spokesperson. And they do it on both sides. But I find that kind of weird, too. I mean, comedians would always do social commentary, but they're at the center of everything right now, you know. And they have Colbert as like an arm of the DNC.
It's almost a way of like, that to me feels like the trickster.
Yes.
The jester, where it's a way of talking about really serious things without taking responsibility for it. And again, it's like the public is not getting a serious conversation about it. They're always getting a conversation that can be dismissed.
Right.
Or put aside and said, well, this was just a joke. Well, I don't think humanity needs any more jokes about these topics. And I think it's just the court jester and the trickster. And I think Elon Musk is actually very guilty of this for someone that has the kind of wealth and power that he has, where he'll be out there boring holes in the earth and putting satellites in the sky and, you know, doing all this, you know, AI stuff. And then also he'll make really juvenile frat boy comments as well at the same time. And I think it's kind of a way of saying, don't take me seriously. Don't take what I'm doing seriously.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's a huge way in how this group actually operates, is by taking on very serious topics, and then kind of creating manipulations through humor and really bastardizing the topics by making jokes of them after the fact, or just the behavior of the people in general is making the topic look really silly.
That's fascinating.